Welcome to the Cowboy Chronicles of the Oklahomans, Oklahoma State Athletics Podcast. I am your host, Scott Wright, joined by Jacob Unruh. And Jacob, it is Bedlam Week. We're finally back at it in the middle of the week. We've had some issues with some basketball things getting in our way, making it difficult for us to get together to pod. But we're back at it for Bedlam Week. We wouldn't miss this one.
Blame Mike Boynton.
That's right. Nah, don't blame Mike. He's too nice. He's too nice.
I know. That's why I said it, because it's really funny when you think you want to blame Mike Boynton for
right.
something.
Exactly. He's too nice to blame for this.
Yes.
Life has gotten in the way. So that's how it goes. Work life has gotten in the way. So we apologize for not bringing you a couple of midweek podcasts the last 2 weeks, but we're back for Bedlam Week. Jacob, I can't get a good read on this game, and it feels weird to say that because the last time I felt this way, I'm pretty sure it was the Iowa State game, and Oklahoma State obviously lost that one. So it feels weird to say that because I really sense that this is Oklahoma State's game to lose, but I can't get a good feeling about it.
Yeah, I've gone back and forth the last few days, maybe a week or two, really. And then I listened to the players talk, and they seemed really confident tonight. And they should
be. They really did.
They really should be, but I don't remember this confidence the last 2 years with
right.
Bedlam coming up.
There was a definite level of comfort in the room tonight as the players were talking, I thought.
Yeah, you know, Spencer had more comfort. Malcolm looked really comfortable. Brendan Evers looked pretty confident.
Yeah.
Logan Carter, I think, felt pretty good.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't read too much into that, but I felt like that kind of boosted how I felt about OSU's chances.
That's fair. I definitely sense that in the room tonight, so I'm not going to argue with you there. I just can't get a good read on what's going to happen, and obviously it's because I think Oklahoma has been such a schizophrenic team
mm-hmm.
that it's hard to predict which version of the Sooners is going to show up. That's the thing that I'm probably having the most difficulty with, is trying to figure out which OU team we're going to see on Saturday.
Yeah, the question is it going to be – because they haven't really played a complete game.
No.
The offense has been good and the defense has been bad, or the defense has been good and the offense has been bad. There's
right.
not – you know, it's chasing each other essentially, and if they come out and play a complete game, I think OSU can really be in some trouble.
Right.
But you can't predict that at this point.
No.
And, you know, we've seen OSU have success against young quarterbacks, and obviously Caleb Williams is a true freshman about to see the best defense he's ever seen probably in his life, I
right.
assume. And it's not going to be easy for that offense. And so I still lean that way.
Yeah, and Williams is coming off a game where he really didn't play all that well. He had the big run early, the 74-yard touchdown run. But he goes 8 of 18 passing for 87 yards and a pick. That's really, really mediocre numbers compared to what he had been doing since he came in that Texas game, and just wowed everybody with what he's been able to do. But it's two games in a row. The offense has stumbled and hasn't been as effective as it was before that, when it looked like Williams was the savior that was coming in to bring this team back to greatness, and they've looked very much human the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I was just about thinking, I was like, and this is against an Iowa State defense that gave up over 500 yards to Tech the week before.
Exactly.
But maybe Tech plays a little more to the opponents than I think people realized, more to their level, their opponents.
Yeah, that's possible.
That's the only thing I can think to explain Iowa State this year. But,
right.
When you look at Caleb Williams struggling like that, I think it's been, three games now or in a row that he's just not throwing the ball well?
Right.
And it's a lot of trying to throw the ball deep and get those big plays, and that just hasn't worked against OSU this year for anybody.
No.
So I go that way. You know, Kennedy Brooks could be a difference maker, obviously. At running back, if he has a good game, he had a good game last week and had a few down games before that. And you know, but the offensive line for OU hasn't been great. It's just
right.
It's not the same offense, you know. And maybe Lincoln Riley is going to be the offensive genius that he normally is, and he's got a bunch of tricks up his sleeve for OSU's defense. But I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I think Lincoln Riley is another wild card in this game because of his creativity and his ability to bring out some stuff that Oklahoma State hasn't seen on film yet. And that's going to be the key, is how quickly and how well does Oklahoma State adjust? And we've talked about that multiple times this year, about how well they adjust on the fly. You know, they're not a defense that has to wait until halftime to go regroup and come back with a better plan. They're able to really adjust on the fly in games, taking calls from upstairs, from Jim Knowles, and making adjustments on the sideline rather than having to wait until halftime to regroup. So I think that's a really important factor, because if Oklahoma comes out and scores 17 really quick, and the Oklahoma State offense isn't matching that, it could get really difficult for Oklahoma State really quickly. That's one scenario that they've got to avoid, I think, Jacob.
Yeah, that's one thing that you and I have talked about. I don't think we've talked about it on the podcast, but it seems like the one way that you have an advantage over OSU is you can score early on that defense. If you jump up early in the defense and stop and the OSU doesn't match, puts them in a hole. It did at Texas.
Right.
That's why Texas had such an advantage, if not for Jason Taylor's pick six, which clearly saved this season.
Yeah.
If not for his pick six, they were in deep trouble there. And who knows how the season turns out. And so if you're OU, you try to jump out quick with everything you got to get up quick and see if you can hold them off that way. But it's easier said than done.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. You look at the Oklahoma defense, they've got some playmakers on that side of the ball. You haven't seen the consistency that you've seen from Oklahoma State's defense, but few teams are doing that, so that's a apples and orange comparison. But they still haven't been incredibly consistent. There are certain guys that show up a lot. Nick Benito shows up a lot. Guys like that. I don't think the secondary is all that strong. I think the injuries and issues that they're going through back there have weakened that unit a little bit. I see some areas where I think Oklahoma State can attack. I'm not saying they're going to go score 40, but I think that they can attack and make an impact on the field offensively. Especially if Jalen Warren is healthy and the offensive line is some semblance of healthy. I think the health issues last week against Texas Tech really slowed things down a little bit and hampered the offense more than you realized. One, because they were still scoring points, and two, because the defense was playing a ridiculous game. So I think the offense has a chance with some good health and some veterans back in key spots to go score some points and do some things that can help help give the defense a little boost so they don't feel like they're having to do everything on Saturday.
Yeah, I think one thing, and I wrote this in today's paper and Tuesday's paper, we're recording this on Tuesday, the offense has been better than people give it credit for.
Yes.
It's especially Big 12 play. The offense has really picked it up. They're leading the Big 12 in a lot of categories, including total points during Big 12 play.
Right.
Spencer Sanders is a huge reason. His play has been great. Jalen Warren, obviously. Tay Martin, the offensive line's been strong. You got to like the chances for OSU's offense to at least not get overwhelmed.
Right.
And you like that. I like the decision-making of Spencer lately. And he talked a lot about that tonight, about, being willing to throw the ball away more, and how it was, it was a hard adjustment for him at first, but he's doing it now and he's making the right decisions. And he says he considers it a good completion to throw it out of bounds.
Yeah.
Which he's like, I know it's not a completion, he says, but it's also not a completion to the other team.
Yeah.
And so that's a good sign. And I think if he's calm and in control, I think OSU's offense is going to be in control.
Yeah. And he's doing that for the longest stretch of his career consistently right now. Going back to, really I'd say the second half of the Texas game. Since then, he's been a different type of quarterback. And, he had the one pick that was a really bad throw in the first half against Texas in that second quarter. But since then, He's had just the one interception, which was that ridiculous play by the Stills brother. I can't remember which
Dante Stills
at West Virginia, and that's the only pick he's thrown since then. So, you know, he's playing on a different level, and he understands the value of keeping possession of the ball, not giving the other team a big momentum swing, and he understands that he doesn't have to be Superman on every play and thread a throw into a tight window or you know, whatever it is that he sees that he could possibly do. So you know, he was really revealing, I thought, really introspective in talking about that tonight. It was pretty fascinating stuff. So really interesting to have seen the development of him over the past 2 years. And he's fired up for another bedlam because he missed the 2019 game, his redshirt freshman year, because of the injury he suffered against Kansas. Then he got knocked out of last year's bedlam and ended up on the sidelines for a good portion of that game. So it was this is an opportunity he, I think, has been looking forward to for a while, and I think that he feels the emotion of this game, and I think that that energizes him because he is so competitive.
Yeah, he kind of lit up when we asked about that question.
Yeah, he did.
He was excited. He didn't want to come out and say they're going to win, but he kind of did.
A little bit.
Wasn't as forceful as Tay Martin was.
Right.
But I think Spencer's could be a difference maker if he's got protection. And there's a lot of ifs around this, but it's kind of how it goes.
Yep, that's exactly right. So there's a lot of question marks in this game, and I think whoever answers those questions in the most positive way is the team that's going to win this game. If Oklahoma's, you know, second half Texas offense shows up, as opposed to the Baylor off the offensive played against Baylor, you know, I think it's going to be a real challenge for Oklahoma State to outscore them. I think that Oklahoma will find a way to put some points on the board, but at the same time, I think that Caleb Williams is going to see some things he's never seen, and it's going to be, you know, it's really going to test him mentally in the pocket. And you hear Mike Gundy talk about it all the time. If you're thinking, you're playing slower, and I think that Oklahoma State is going to be able to make him think in a lot of situations, and that's going to slow things down for a guy who really relies on speed and quickness, both as in how he moves and how he makes decisions.
Yeah, I think when you look at this defense, you know, I think Knowles is just a master of confusion and disguise, and you know, he told me, and you know, spoiler alert, there's a story coming out tomorrow. Wednesday's paper that I wrote on Jim Knowles kind of took a peek in the mind of the mad scientist. I didn't get this in the story, so this is a little behind the scenes for people. But he talked about, you know, in this league, the whole goal is to disguise, because offensive coordinators, all they do is try to steal your signals.
Right.
They try to get you one up that way, and then they go for the jugular. Mm-hmm. And so he's learned that it's all about disguise. And that's what he does very, very well at this point. And for a true freshman quarterback like Caleb Williams, who knows what he's going to see out there? He might feel like he's going to see 14 Cowboys on the field.
He's going to be seeing ghosts.
Yes. And that can make a huge difference if that's the case.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I think that's the one of the big question marks on the Oklahoma State side is, how well did they get into his head? If he's seeing ghosts and he's overthinking things and having to analyze everything, I think that's really good news for Oklahoma State. I think that's going to be, you know, they're going to be able to put pressure on him. I mean, we've seen them do that to everybody they've faced this year. That's why they're one of the national leaders in sacks. they're going to get in his face and at least make him move. They're going to get him off his spots. They're going to make him read the field on the move and with guys coming at him. So I think if they do that well and at the same time contain the run, I think that's really good news for Oklahoma State in terms of how this game plays out. So, you know, it's really hard to bet against this defense right now because, you know, Mike Gundy has said it multiple times. His biggest concern is that they're going to have a letdown eventually because they just haven't had one. And I wonder if they're so good that we just didn't even realize it. Maybe Iowa State was their letdown, exactly. And we just didn't notice because they're so good.
The letdown is they could get to Brock Purdy in the second half.
Yeah. So it's a fascinating situation going on with this defense and how well they're playing, and we'll see what they can do in Bedlam. Just a little bit before we started taping, the college football playoff rankings came out. Oklahoma State at number 7, Baylor at number 8, Oklahoma at number 10. Your
Big
thoughts?
12's proud here.
Yeah, your thoughts on the Cowboys jumping up to number 7 this week?
I mean, I guess it's about right. I still think OSU should be higher, and I know I cover the team every day, but I think they should be higher. But I think I'm starting to believe they have a chance if they win out the next two games. I'm starting to really feel that way. If they go and shut down OU. And they go and beat Baylor again because Baylor obviously is very high in the minds of the playoff committee.
Right.
It's going to be hard. I might say they're going to get in, but I think it's hard to keep them out. And, you know, if you've got a – the question could come down to a 2-loss Alabama and a 1-loss OSU.
Right. And that's going to be a fascinating conversation if that's what happens. That could be really fascinating to watch how that plays out. So, you're right. I think 7 is where I expected Oklahoma State to be. I kind of feel like some of what they've done has gone under the radar a little bit. Gary Barta did talk about the value of their Baylor win in his teleconference tonight, although. Still feels like that's one that they're maybe not getting quite as much credit for.
They're getting hurt with that being so early in the season,
right.
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a long time ago now, if you look back. So, because the respect that Baylor is getting versus the respect that Oklahoma State is getting, they don't seem to align in terms of Baylor being number 8 with 2 losses. It's a really interesting scenario to look at.
It's weird because you better lost to TCU.
Right, exactly.
And then TCU got demoralized by OSU, so it's weird.
Yeah, it is. It's very interesting the way that some of these guys are being viewed, some of these teams are being viewed by the committee. Gary Barta did. Now, I asked him directly, is Oklahoma State being viewed in a different pod? Because he was talking about the pods that teams are viewed with. In terms of their rankings, and he didn't. When I asked him directly, he didn't. He kind of hedged a little bit, but earlier in the teleconference, before I got to ask my question, he did address Oklahoma State in the same conversation with the teams at 4, 5, and 6.
Okay.
So it was very interesting to hear. The way that he talked about it because it sounded like they were getting looked at least on some level with those teams. So
good news, Cowboys fans.
Yeah, I think that they've at least cracked the door open a little bit to get themselves in that discussion now. And there's nobody in their range of the rankings that has as much left on the table as what Oklahoma State does in terms of 2 top 10 teams that they could possibly beat the next 2 weeks. I don't think anybody else has that much left that they can add to their resume. So it will be really interesting to see how this Oklahoma State team is viewed from here going forward with those two games on the table for them.
Yeah, I think obviously OSU needs to win out. There's no doubt there. But I think there's the added benefit if they win out, they've beaten OU at 10 and Baylor at, I don't know, Baylor may stay at 8 next week, but they could rise up to, you know, at that point going into next week.
Yeah, depending on
what
else happens.
And so, but you beat two top 10 teams. You don't have to beat OU twice. I don't think there's any value in beating the same team twice in 2 weeks.
Right.
Anymore. I don't think OU is going to get a big boost from it necessarily. They beat OSU twice.
Right.
I have a hard time seeing that because Baylor could still win Saturday and OU wins. Obviously, and OU gets in the title game and beats OSU. Like, they still have that loss to Baylor that's above them. So,
yeah.
I don't think it's any benefit there. I think OSU's best bet is to go win both games, and it really boosts the resume.
Yep. It absolutely is. And I think they become a team that demands respect at that point if they go win these two games. So it's all going to be fun. Nothing but interesting, as we like to say around our office.
Yes. So. I'm excited.
All right. Well, I believe that brings us to the most important thing I forgot. What else we got hanging out there?
Oh, what else do we have hanging out there? Let's see.
Should we talk some basketball? You've been keeping up with the basketball team.
Sure. They're pretty good.
They're solid.
A little up and down at times right now. 5-1 going into Friday's matchup with the Sweet 16 Cinderella Oral Roberts. That's a mouthful.
Yeah.
But I might write that this weekend. The big men have made a huge difference for these Cowboys. Boynton's never had this availability of big men, excuse me. Moussa Cisse, who should be 7 feet tall on the roster. I don't know why he's not. This is at 6'10". He's getting the Kevin Durant roster treatment. Has made a big difference. Caleb Boone might be one of the most skilled post-offensive players in the country.
Yeah.
And Tyreek Smith is really coming along. The Texas Tech transfer is making a big difference. And they've added Bryce Williams back to the lineup. He's incredibly athletic, doing crazy, stupid plays last night in the rout of Charleston. And Bryce Thompson's off to a really good start. Avery Anderson's been a little slow. Isaac Likely's been a little slow, but they're coming around a little. Avery had a really good night last night. So I think there's a lot to be excited about for this team. It's early, but they're about to really kick up the meter schedule. They got ORU, obviously, and Max Asmus on Friday afternoon. And then next Wednesday they got Wichita State. So they're really starting to pick up the schedule a little bit.
Bryce Thompson is a guy that's intriguing to me because I kind of thought he would maybe need a little bit of time to to acclimate himself to kind of the program and what was being expected of him. Has he outperformed expectations to this point?
I think so. I think at least around maybe the team, I think,
right,
a little bit, because I think the expectations with the fans are incredibly high for him.
That makes
sense. He hit 4 3-pointers last night. Looks like he's comfortable in the offense, playing solid defense. He's not a great defender, but he does enough to get by. And he's made a lot of progress, I think, offensively, which has been the biggest thing. Because last year he was kind of a mess there with Kansas. So the injuries played a lot into that. But, you know, I think that's been a really pleasant surprise. It's got him in the starting lineup and starting to make things happen.
Yeah, it's been I know they had the difficult loss to Oakland, but they seem to have responded really well since that point, and really have kind of got the season back on track from that point of the season.
And we got to give credit to Mike Boynton on that. He didn't like the way they played against Oakland, obviously, but I think he said it was selfish basketball. So I think there was a lot of egos coming into play in that
right.
one, and everyone trying to do their own thing, and it didn't work out. And so the next day, next game, 2 days later, he went to all platoons, basically, where he just did same five on the floor at the same time and made it really hard. It was an ugly game, and he made it ugly on purpose to prove a point that you have to play together to be able to win games. And I think it's really kind of resonated.
Yeah, it seems like it has hit home for those guys. So really, really impressive work by Boynton. Anything else that that I forgot? I got one more. If you don't have anything else,
I don't. I'm dropping the ball tonight.
Malcolm Rodriguez was left off of the Butkus Award.
Oh yeah,
finalist
yeah.
list. Six guys on the list, if I counted right, and he was not among them.
Five.
Was it five?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know why I had six in my head.
Six would have been him. I hope.
You would hope. Yeah. Some surprising names on that list. Obviously, I'm not a voter. I didn't dig into it as deeply as I would have if I was a voter. But it's just really hard to imagine guys that are as productive and as meaningful to their mm-hmm. team as Malcolm Rodriguez.
Yeah, I don't get it. When I saw the guy from Wyoming on there, I thought, what? I don't even know anything about Wyoming this year.
Right. And the Georgia guy is a big-time player.
Yes.
Obviously, they're a great defense. But statistically, he doesn't stack up to what Malcolm is doing.
No.
So it's really odd seeing the names that made it and the names that didn't.
And then PFF, I think, has Malcolm as like the fourth best linebacker in FBS.
Right.
Graded out on their analytics system. You know, and so I he seems like a no-brainer to at least be a finalist. I don't think he's.
Right.
I didn't think he's going to win the award, but he should have at least been a finalist.
Yeah, and you know, PFF. I voted in the Biletnikoff Award this year. I am a voter in the Biletnikoff. It's not over yet. I got to remind myself of that. I got to still one more vote to cast. don't want to forget about that one. You know, you look at. I looked at every piece of information that I could and. PFF was one that I took. I put a lot of stock in because it takes into account the full game. You know, everything that a player does. You know, it takes into account run blocking and, mm-hmm. and all these different sorts of things and how they're graded across the board. You know, I didn't follow their numbers out the window, but I definitely put a lot of stock in that when I was making my judgments and. Comparing, if I was voting on a linebacker, I think I would put even more stock in PFF.
Yeah.
Because so much of what a receiver does is production related and can be told statistically rather than in terms of grades. But at linebacker, you've got to factor in both, I think. So, you know, I was a little surprised to see the way that things went for Malcolm. Didn't seem to bother him all that much.
No, he didn't seem to care. His teammates seemed to care more.
Yeah.
Now, I think people are going to riot in Stillwater if Jim Knowles is not a finalist for the Broyles Award.
Yes, that will be the case. And that's really probably short of a national championship and a Big 12 title. I would put the Broyles Award third on the most prestigious accomplishments.
Yes.
For this team, what they can achieve at this point, because that is a team-wide award. Obviously, Knowles is getting the attention for the Broyles Award for being the defensive coordinator and being one of the best assistant coaches in the game. But it's because his players are executing, because his staff is doing everything right, and it's a group-wide effort to get. Jim Knowles on that list as a semifinalist, one of 15 that was announced earlier today. So, really impressive feat, and I think that's a pretty high honor that Oklahoma State is going to be in line for at that point. We'll see how it goes from here. Obviously, a couple of more impressive defensive performances will help his case greatly. So, we'll see. All right, anything else, Jacob?
I think that's it. Let's go All have right. some Bedlam football.
Let's
and
do
some
it.
Turkey.
And some turkey. It's a good week for both. All right, with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Cowboy Chronicles, and we will talk to you again on Saturday night.